things. Good things. Very good things. Sweet things.
Hello and welcome to Having Said That podcast number 8. I'm about to read a story that I wrote in November of 2000, basically around my first acid trip. And I've given it a new title called Tangier High. So please have a listen. I first saw Jack at the train station in Cordoba, black hair and beard, wearing a fringed buckskin jacket, looking a little fat and goofy, and in my mind, not at all cool. A guy I didn't particularly want to speak to or be seen with. Peter and I had come down from Barcelona and were on the last leg of our trip through Spain, planning to catch a ferry to Morocco the next day. Pete and Jack started talking, usual fellow traveler shit. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? What's the word? While I kept my distance, silently cursing Peter for his friendliness. He was a good traveling partner, a young Brit, bright, very funny, and very hip. We'd been traveling together ever since leaving Athens for the caves of Crete, which we had heard were full of hash. They were, but that's another story. At the post office in Heraklion, we heard about this Turkish freighter leaving Piraeus for Barcelona. A 5-day sail, stopping in Napoli and Marseille, $30 for bunk and steerage. But since the Turks didn't care to share, the purser moved us and the white South Africans into tourist cabins, and a good time was had by all. Barcelona was a great scene, cheap, colorful, and a little rough. But the word on the street was Morocco was still a place to be, next stop on the hippie trail. Back in Cordoba, Jack introduced himself and his wife, Jude, nice-looking lady. In fact, I wonder what the hell she was doing with a jerk like him. And suggested we try to get a compartment together on the train, share food and all that. At this point, I didn't care. I was beat from spending 12 hours without a seat on the last train, much of it lying down in the corridor and being stepped on. Anyway, we got separated and didn't meet up again until Spanish customs at the ferry terminal. We had already exited Spain and were being stamped into Morocco, waiting to board the ferry for Tangier. That's when I opened my big mouth and told Peter to keep calm, because he seemed to be acting nervous. The Moroccan immigration guy looked up at me, stamped Peter's passport, entrada, waved in through, and pointed me to a bench. There. But I'm with my friends, I argued. I'm traveling with those people. I'm with them. We're together. His hand motioned again to the solitary bench, positioned in a no-man's land, legally outside of Spain, but not inside of Morocco. He then stamped and waved the next few people through to join the crowd getting on the ferry. I yelled across to Peter, who had already seemed quite comfortable and relaxed with his new traveling companions, shrugging to show there's nothing he could do. See you later, Ken. Jack turned and called back to me, Pension Miami! And then everyone was gone but me and a few other misfits of Moroccan immigration had decided were unworthy guests this time around. I had absolutely no clue what to do next. But someone said there was a ferry to Ceuta in an hour, a Spanish port on the Moroccan mainland, and all we had to do was enter Spain again, cross the Straits of Gibraltar, and then try to get into Morocco by land. I figured it must have been my long hair and goatee that kept me out the first time. There may have been a hippie quota. So as soon as we hit Ceuta, I went straight to a barber shop and got trimmed, short hair, clean shaven. No way they'll turn me away this time. Looking back now, I realize it was probably my remark to Peter that triggered the finger. I was a guy looking nervous and jumpy, like a speed freak needing a fix, of which there were many in those days. Anyone who's backpacked outside of North America knows what traveling on a chicken bus is like, stopping every few kilometers for a shakedown by the local police, chicken and goats in the aisles, contraband and bribes, fellow passengers stinking, staring, or touching, and at every rest stop, a swarm of children offering to sell whatever they think it is you want. Hashish, good shit, my little sister, nice boy for you. When all you really want is some food you can eat without the risk of shitting yourself silly. The bus finally arrived at the Moroccan border, where the immigration officials seemed a bit more laid back. I buddied up with an Aussie and a French guy I met in town. We went to a restaurant to eat and score some hash, and by now things were starting to look a lot better. Just had to catch another bus to Tangier, ask for Pension Miami, and I'll be getting stoned with my old pal Pete by nightfall. Hey, I even felt good about getting in on my own by the back door, one more notch in my traveler's belt. The main bus station in Tangier was as expected, a fucking drag. Trying to reach up for my pack, being handed down from the roof before someone else got it, all the while being mobbed by a dozen kids pretending to help but just causing chaos. Then a bigger Abdul comes along, tells the smaller Abduls to bugger off, and next thing you're in his hands, grateful at having only one prick to deal with. You suggest you don't need his help, and in the blink of an eye you're swarmed again. You catch on, shoulder your pack, tell Abdul where you want to get to, and off you go. Abdul knows the longest way there, of course, leading you past every shop selling keef pipes, carpets, trinkets, carvings, letting the shopkeepers know there's another rich American in town, and he gets a cut for bringing you around. By some miracle, you eventually arrive at a clean-looking place called Pension Miami, and in you all go, only to find it's full. The ferry crowd must have followed Jim's lead. Pete and the others are out, who knows where, so no chance to sneak in and wait. Abdul knows another good place, naturally. So me, the Aussie, and the French guy agree to share a room in the Medina, the Arab maze, and the cheaper non-tourist part of town. 2 dirhams or 40 cents gets a big enough straw mattress in an empty white room. Those guys want to explore the Medina, but all I want to do is find Pete and try to move into the pension the next day. Getting back at the Medina in daylight straight was not so bad. Finding my way back home in the dark, zonked and alone, was another story. I couldn't believe after all the pipes we smoked that Pete would send me off on my own. Come with me, eh? Sorry, man, Peter giggled. Keep cool. I might have, were it not for the drunken Arab, who couldn't resist throwing a scare into what he rightly guessed was a stone freak scurrying by the cafe. All I saw was this guy in a jalaba, jumping up from his chair with his arm held high overhead as if holding a knife and yelling as he leapt towards me. Fuck off! I screamed back over my shoulder as I doubled my pace into the darkness of the Medina, not joining in the loud laughter that followed. Bastard probably did that to every freaked-out hippie on the street. Next day I checked into the Pension Miami. It almost got all of us thrown out. First of all, Abdul was on my tail, wanting a cut for taking me there the day before. I paid the first night's 5 dirhams to the owner, knowing that he'd get 1 dirham for guiding me there, but was bloody stupid enough to call out the window at a fellow traveler that if he came to the place on his own, he'd save the equivalent of 20 cents. Abdul came running up the stairs, heading straight for my throat, and it was only the intervention of the owner promising to look after him that saved me from the beating I deserved for this callous insensitivity. Here I was, another middle-class North American in Morocco for a lark, trying to deprive this poor kid of his hard-earned commission, even if he was a prick. Don't worry, I've paid for that act many times over. It was the smoking that caused the problem. The cops came in every evening, taking their cut, I suppose, and just letting us know the authorities were around, keeping an eye on things. The madam assured them all was well, no trouble here, and as soon as they left, came to our front room to tell us that the whole time the police were in the hallway, the smoke from our pipes was literally billowing out from under our door. We were immediately moved into a room at the back of the pension, where madame assured us we'd be less likely to bother anyone. Ha! Ours soon became the party room for visiting heads from all over Europe and North America. Once we got settled in our room, we started a very pleasant routine. As soon as we woke up, we lit our pipes, the first thing you buy in Tangier. Pete already had scored about 4 ounces of keef the day they arrived, so there's more than enough for both of us and guests. Then, after getting off, a lighter stone than real hash, we'd call the housemaid, Hadouche, to bring us a big pot of fresh mint tea. Eventually, we'd wander into the kitchen, rub our stomachs, and the madame would tell us, in Spanish, our choices, at which we'd just smile, sit down, and eat whatever was brought to us. She seemed to know what wasted Westerners wanted, omelets being a favorite. By now, another character, Francis, had joined our friendly little entourage, a wild and crazy gay from Chicago, owner of a curio shop called The Idle Hour. Francis, dressed from head to toe in a white hooded jalaba, revealing only his chubby pink face and bushy black beard, was our entertainer, a role he relished. Not everyone appreciated his antics, like the time he polished off a plastic bottle of wine and tossed the empty over his shoulder and into the street below. Drinking was bad enough, but throwing empties at the Moroccan pedestrians was a serious insult. The more we tried to reason with Francis, the more entertaining he became, raising a ruckus as he swished from one scene to another. Meanwhile, I was surprised to see that Jack and Jube were guests of honor at the Pension Miami. The owner kept fussing over them and bringing them stuff like they'd been friends for years, including presents for their little baby girl back home. Turns out they were friends. This was Jude's first visit, but Jack had stayed there many times, every time he came to Morocco to score 5 or 6 kilos of hash to bring back to Vancouver. This was to be his last trip. With this score, which he was busy arranging while we drank mint tea and smoked our brains out, he figured he'd have enough to buy a house and settle down. Turns out, in fact, that the whole goofy Canuck routine that had turned me off in Cordoba was all an act to throw off the narcs. Who'd ever suspect that asshole was actually a very crafty drug smuggler? Even the fake chubby bit was so he wouldn't look any different when he left with 6 kilos taped to his body. Jack was a real gentleman, so Jude didn't have to carry any. Of course, I didn't know any of this until we were already off on the acid, and by this point, Jack had become a very cool guy indeed. For him, the acid was just a little recreation, maybe to take his mind off his work, but for me, taking it was one monumentally huge decision, never having tried it before and knowing only that if it was bad, it was very, very bad. Jack told us not to worry. It was coming from his dealer, guaranteed pure LSD. Peter kept saying, "Hey, it's cool, man, it's cool. I've done it lots of times." Fortunately, Jack was telling the truth, and I never had acid as good as that stuff since. Unfortunately, Peter was lying, had never tried it, and went on to have one very bum trip until we finally got him calmed down around dawn. Pete and I kept to our plan of staying stoned the entire time we were in Morocco. Pete had a set of bongos and would play for hours, or so it seemed, while I'd go into hysterics watching his face change with every new beat. Jack had come back from a meeting with his dealer and stopped by our room to listen and watch us. "Far out. You guys are still at the flower stage. I love it." Peter and I felt put down and denied whatever Jack was saying about us. In my mind, there was a hierarchy of cool, and it sounded like a Jack had just put us down a few levels. "No, man. I mean, you're supposed to laugh. It's a gas. I've done so much dope. I just don't laugh like that anymore. Hey, man, enjoy it." I was still having trouble getting a big handle on Big Jack, but the more time we spent with him, the groovier this guy seemed to be. That same evening, Jack asked us if we wanted to do the acid. And aside from being scared shitless about what might happen to me, I couldn't think of any reason to say no. We each swallowed the little pieces of blotter Jack handed out. Pete, me, Jack, and Jude. Francis declined, but would hang out with us later when things got interesting. I was starting to wonder if I had just made a huge mistake, but Peter kept reassuring me everything would be fine. It was cool, not letting on it was his first trip, too. Jack grinned and told us to just let it happen, enjoy the ride, and thanks to that guardian angel who watches over me every time I do something stupid. That's exactly what I did. Rode out that acid wave like a natural-born surfer. Peter, much to our dismay, did the opposite, fighting everything that came his way, starting with a pack of wild dogs. Understandable, perhaps. That was the meanest, mangiest, ugliest, hungriest-looking pack of dogs I've ever seen. And as they tried to circle us out there on the beach. It was dark, and a pleasant stroll along the water's edge, stars high above, had seemed a great idea, and was, at least until the dogs came. Each dog looked like evil incarnate, slinking low and circling closer and closer. Not the "here, boy" kind of dog, but the diseased and vicious-looking kind, ready to snap and tear off a leg or bite off a nose. Peter freaked, yelling at us, "I saw those dogs in Pakistan. They'll kill you. They're killers." We threw a few rocks, but that just agitated Peter more than the dogs. which would stop when we stopped and follow when we moved on. We tried to shift Peter's attention onto something else, but he was already in a downward spiral, ranting about blood and childhood memories or nightmares. Maybe I was still ticked at being left behind at the ferry dock, or maybe it was Pete's confession that he had never actually done anything like this before. It might have been mescaline or something, but it sure as fuck wasn't like this stuff. For whatever reason, I had a smile a mile wide that didn't leave my face until morning, and life just couldn't be any finer. That's about when we saw those two hooded figures approaching from a distance, heading straight our way across the sand, slow and steady. Stay cool, was Big Jim's advice, but Peter seemed determined to act out against this intrusion. From 3 feet away, we could all clearly make out the small black gun pointed at waist level. Thieves or cops, we couldn't tell, and since we each had hash pipes and stash of Keef stuffed in our boots, we didn't know which was worse. I stayed grinning, looking more insane and happy, I'm sure, seeing this just another trip into the trip. Peter saw things differently, telling us all once again, I saw this in Pakistan, they're thieves! And then, like a true Brit, decided to take the upper hand by demanding to see their papers. Jack, quietly at first, reminded Peter that they had a gun pointing at us. But this didn't seem to make much of an impression on Peter, who was still convinced he was in complete control of the situation, putting these crooks in their proper place, as no doubt he had seen some old boy Brit do in Pakistan back in his childhood. For Christ's sake, shut the fuck up, man. They got a gun, Jack shouted at our frenzied friend. But none of this seemed to faze the two strangers staring at us. Commands were given, which none of us understood, and given again in Spanish, which we still didn't understand, and then I decided it was my turn to act. Don't worry, I can speak French, I announced. I'll handle this. I knew I'd do better than Pete, who was now just muttering to himself, and sure enough, once I explained, oui, nous avons un passeport, non pas ici, oui, nous avons un hostel, they put away the gun and walked off. Seemed they thought we had maybe entered Morocco illegally by boat that night, but our crazy performance convinced them we were just another group of stupid stoned Americanos, thank God. We were all peaking by this time, seeing everything in all its acid glory. Hard to say exactly what Peter was experiencing, but the look on his face told us it wasn't good, poor guy. We did a few pipes, using what Pete and I call the big clay party bowl, which of course had no effect but brought us all a little bit closer, and wandered off into the Tangier night. The street scene was more interesting, even though they were mostly deserted at that hour. A drunk staggered by and joined us, an outcast in this mainly Muslim society, lower than any beggar. But to us, he seemed almost holy, his toothless smile an affirmation that it was always right this night. His friend, who appeared to be mute, came out from hiding, took out his flute, and filled the empty night air with sweet sounds. It felt as though we were all meant to be together for some great unknown cosmic purpose that January night in 1970, sharing a street corner in Tangier. This was all too serious, but we soon had comic relief. Francis suddenly came, billowing by in his white jalaba, twirling to the music, singing out crazy lines to make us laugh and blow our minds. Then, just as quickly, as if prearranged, a black taxi drove up, stopped, a door flew open, Francis poured himself into the back, and then they were gone, off into the dark night. Francis had other adventures in mind in the form of brown-skinned boys hidden away in some secret club in the Kasbah. We all stood grinning, except Pete, who seemed to think Francis needed help, and waited for the next spectacle, knowing we were just where we were supposed to be, and all that we were meant to see would reveal itself in time. A Mercedes roared by, stopped, reversed, and out jumped three well-dressed men wanting to know why we were there. Our Cheshire smiles answered for us, to which one man scolded, "These streets are dangerous. You can get in serious trouble being here like this." Jack dismissed his warnings with a, "It's cool, man. Don't worry." They were heading to their favorite nightclubs when they saw us. And when there was nothing more to say, they climbed back into the waiting car and sped off. Just before getting in, the one who warned us whispered, "That man's father owns Monsanto." Jack figured he meant the huge Monsanto chemical company, representing all that was dark and evil in the world, casting a sinister shadow over the departing group. Looking back now, I like to think that one of those suited men was William Burroughs, who had just finished writing The Wild Boys. But no, they were probably just rich, depraved, self-important nobodies. Every moment seemed like an eternity, but the hours passed, the sky turned lighter, and now it was time to go our separate ways. Safe within the pale blue walls of our room, Peter began to feel less paranoid, but coming down was a little weird for both of us. Just when we thought the ride was over, we'd suddenly shoot back up in a flash, start tripping again, wondering if we'd ever really return to normal. That called for some heavy smoking, as anyone who's done acid will tell you, and sure enough, as the acid wore off, the keef kicked in, and all was well once again. My last hallucination, as I lay on my bed, ready for sleep to carry me off, was the crow of a rooster outside, turning into the voice of a woman singing to me. I smiled, thankful for this heavenly angel. I closed my eyes, the sounds became colors, the colors took shape and reshaped, and soon I slept. Now, 30 years later, as I recount this adventure from the comfort of my suburban home, I realize I'll never walk that road again, and smile for not having to think. I wonder what it would have been like.
Was so much colder then. My father was a soldier then, and times were very hard when I was young. When I was young, I smoked my first cigarette at 10, and for girls I had a bad yen, and I had quite a ball when I was young. When I was young, it was more important. Pain, more pain, fun, a laughter much louder. Green, and I learned quite a lot when I was young. When I was young. Was so much stronger then. I believed in fellow men, and I was so much older then. When I was young, when I